or regulated militia be necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. We're going to be talking about what's going on in the land of 10,000 lakes. So we are in the final days of the legislative session in Minnesota. Sine die is supposed to happen no later than next Monday. So less than a week to go. It could be and probably will be the case that the state legislature will work over the weekend. Right now, all eyes are on the state house. The state senate has passed a omnibus bill that includes a ban on so-called assault weapons and large capacity magazines, which I believe in Minnesota has been arbitrarily defined as anything that can hold more than 17 rounds of ammunition. You know, again, just like assault weapon, large capacity magazine is a term of art, right? It's not a legal definition because it's whatever, frankly, anti-gun lawmakers want it to be. In California, a large capacity magazine is anything over 10 rounds. In Virginia, as of July the 1st, it'll be any magazine that can hold more than 15 rounds. And then in Minnesota, again, anything that can hold more than 17 rounds. In Colorado, I think it's anything that can hold over 20 rounds when we're talking about rifles, maybe 15 rounds for handguns. I think that's the case. I could be wrong about that. I think maybe that was a bill that was offered a couple of years ago, but did not make it into law now that I think about it. Again, it doesn't matter. The phrase large capacity magazine means whatever anti-gunners want it to mean. Today it could be 15 rounds or 10 rounds. Tomorrow it could be 5 rounds or 3 rounds, right? But in addition to this bill that would ban the sale and manufacture and transfer of assault weapons, quote-unquote, and large-capacity magazines, the Senate bill also offers funding for school security, mental health treatment, packaged all together, right? Which is why they were able to get a couple of the reluctant Democrat senators to go along with this bill. Democrats have a one-seat majority in the Senate. They got all Democrats to vote in favor of this bill. And already a couple of the more, you know, quote-unquote moderate state senators who represent more rural parts of the state are pointing to the increased funding for school security, for mental health. They're not really talking about the gun and magazine ban. One state senator who actually signed on to the idea of a gun ban pretty early on during Florida debate, she said, well, I hate that, you know, we're making this political, and she had, you know, grave concerns about this, but she's voting for it again because of all of these other non-gun control measures. Sure. So now the bill that's passed out of the Senate has gone over to the House side. The House is evenly divided in Minnesota, equal number of Democrats and Republicans. Under a power sharing agreement, you've got a Republican Speaker of the House, Lisa DeMuth. She is also one of the Republicans running for the gubernatorial nomination over on the GOP side. She has given what I would call slightly mixed messages about a vote on a gun ban bill. According to a couple of parents of Annunciation students, remember it was the shooting at Annunciation Church in Minneapolis that prompted the latest call for a gun and magazine ban. She told them that she would not hold up a full vote by the House. And even now, she says she won't hold up a vote by the full House, but the bill that passed out of the Senate has to go through the committee process. Well, again, in the waning days of the legislative session, that may or may not be possible. So Democrats want this bill to bypass the committee process. They want to bring it directly to the House floor for a vote. They would love to coerce a Republican into going along so the bill can pass. But even if not, they can make political hay out of this. They can claim that Republicans don't care about school kids because they didn't vote for this package that also included, you know, funding for school security, mental health, in addition to the gun and magazine ban. So the latest stunt that the Democrats are trying to pull, Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus announced this yesterday afternoon. Representative Censor Mura just announced on the House floor that if the Speaker doesn't move the DFL's massive gun control package, Democrats are going to hold a sit-in on the House floor. Apparently, constitutional rights are now subject to political performance art. No amount of floor theater changes the Constitution, the gun rights group said. And yes, Representative Samantha Sensor-Murrah, DFL member from Minneapolis, said, quote, if Speaker DeMuth does not report this bill by 5 p.m. tomorrow on Thursday, May 14th, I, along with other members of this body, will engage in an overnight sit-in here in the chamber. A legislative sleepover. Now, what's this going to do? Nothing, really. It would force Republicans to stay in the chamber so that Democrats don't have a majority, right? But it's not going to change anybody's mind. It's not going to move the bill forward. It is political theater and nothing more than that. Rob Doerr, who is the head of the Minnesota Gun Owners Law Center, noted on X, quote, bipartisan public safety policy does not become stronger when it is stapled to divisive gun control proposals. It becomes expendable. And he noted 6 of the 9 proposals that are in the Senate bill could pass the Minnesota legislature tomorrow. But the goal isn't to have them pass. The goal is to make Republicans vote against gun control and then pretend they voted against safety. Campaign mailers trump public safety again, he writes. And he's absolutely correct. It is sad that it is politics are being played this way. But politics are being played this way. Republicans had legislation this session that would have increased school security funding for both public and private schools, and Democrats rejected that proposal outright. Not one of them would go along with that proposal in the State House. So it died in committee. Democrats say, we're not doing this unless we have gun control. Republicans say, we're not doing this if we have gun control. And so what is likely to happen is that additional funding for school security is likely to die on the vine in order for Democrats to have a talking point in the campaign trail this fall. And this is an issue. I think it was the Fox affiliate in Minneapolis-St. Paul ran a story earlier this year about how some school districts in Minnesota, they don't even have doors on classrooms. They've got curtains. So not even unlocking doors. They don't have a door to the classroom. You've got, you know, broken windows in facilities. You've got doors to the outside that don't lock, unfortunately. And, you know, you could argue that it's up to the local school districts to come up with the funds to make these repairs. I think there's an argument to be made. But ostensibly, both Republicans and Democrats want to help these school districts. It's just that with the Democrats, there are some strings attached, right? Sure, you can have that money, but not unless you give up some of your Second Amendment rights. Yeah. There was also a post on X by a lawmaker, Jeremy Munson, who said in 2018, my first year in the Minnesota legislature, when Republicans had full control of the legislature, Aaron May Quaid orchestrated a sit-in to demand gun control. Adding, she cost taxpayers money to hire 24-hour security, landed herself a photo in Teen Vogue. And he added, today, Democrats announced another sit-in for the same purpose, to make law-abiding citizens defenseless against armed criminals who don't follow gun laws. Yeah. And again, they're going to continue to do this. They're going to continue to try to put pressure on Republicans. Primary goal, yes, it is to get this gun and magazine ban bill to Governor Tim Walz, to try to convince one Republican in the House to give up their opposition to these gun and magazine bans and to side with Democrats. That's the primary objective. But the secondary objective is, okay, well, if we can't get that, then let's paint Republicans as politicians who care more about their guns than kids. Politicians who care more about the Second Amendment than, you know, the safety of school children. And they're going to try to run that into the ground between now and November if this gun and magazine ban bill doesn't pass. I got to say, you know, we've been following what's going on in Minnesota really since the shooting at Annunciation Church last August, and the politics the Democrats have played. I understand politics is an ugly game. And, you know, I don't think that Republicans across the country are blameless. But it has been despicable to watch what the Democrats have done with this issue. You had Governor Tim Walz, almost immediately after the shooting, say, I'm calling for a special session. We're going to get this done. We're going to get a gun magazine ban through. And it's up to the governor in Minnesota to call a special session. And Governor Walz said he was going to do so. And then he didn't. And he hemmed and he hawed. And ultimately he said, well, there's no point in doing it. It's not going to pass. Not because there were Democrats who were on the fence, but because, again, pointing the finger at Republicans. So, you know, Walz was cowardly about this and politicized this tragedy from the get-go. A statesman-like approach to this, even if this statesman is in favor of gun control, the adult response would be, I'm calling a legislative session. We're going to have a number of proposals. We're not going to let perfect be the enemy of good. I understand that there are some things that my Republican counterparts object to. I understand that there's some things that my fellow Democrats might object to. But we're going to lay them all out. And I believe that every one of these proposals will advance public safety. If we can get 4 of the 6 or 5 of the 6, okay, that's great. I'm not going to, you know, try to package this all together so it's all or nothing. Because I believe that every one of these things that we could do is worthwhile. And they could have had a standalone proposal to increase funding for school security across the state. They could have had a standalone proposal to increase mental health funding across the state. Minnesota is one of the worst states in the nation when it comes to mental health access, particularly for juveniles. Outside of the Twin Cities, it is nigh near impossible for you to see a mental health counselor. You know, sure, there's, you know, maybe teleoptions available. For those in acute crisis, though, for those who actually need like inpatient care, good luck. They've got a shortage of inpatient beds. They've got a shortage of staff for these inpatient facilities. So you could have had a standalone bill to increase mental health funding. You could have had a standalone bill to ban so-called assault weapons and large capacity magazines. But that's not what Tim Walz wanted. Again, Tim Walz was playing politics with this issue from the get-go. And Democrat lawmakers have fallen in line behind the governor. Rob Doerr's right. There is bipartisan support, supposedly, for things like increased security on school campuses, greater access to mental health care. And it's not Republicans that are holding this up, it's the Democrats who are. By tying those issues together with their demands for bans on commonly owned firearms, commonly owned magazines. And then they're going to have the audacity to turn around and point the finger at Republicans for not doing anything when the Democrats poison the well. It's despicable. It really is. And if the Senate bill were to somehow reach the House floor and an amendment was offered to strip out the gun control language, but to keep the funding for school security and mental health in place, I think every Democrat in the House would vote against that amendment. Now, I'm not suggesting that Speaker DeMuth should do that. But I do think that if that came to pass, no, you would see zero support among the Democrat caucus in the House for, again, simply doing what supposedly there is bipartisan consensus on. It is a choice by Democrats to make this an all or nothing approach. And if the result is nothing, that's going to be on Democrats, not Republicans. All right, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story. Well, before we do that, I should just mention again, if you're a Minnesota gun owner, please follow the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus please be in contact with your House member. Please contact the Speaker DeMuth's office. Urge her to stand firm. And then we'll talk about next steps after the legislative session wraps up, if the gun and magazine ban bill is defeated. All right, now let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Indiana. I am confused about this, I have to say. This is, I don't know if this is the fault of the DOJ, or this is a federal judge, but for whatever reason, an Indiana man has received nothing more than federal probation for selling cocaine and firearms on the black market in Indiana. This comes from a WYZZ. An Indiana man sentenced to federal probation for selling cocaine and guns in Bloomington. May 7th, Melvin May, age 44, formerly of Bloomington, Indiana, now of Indianapolis, was sentenced to 5 years probation by U.S. District Judge Jonathan Hawley, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office in Springfield, Illinois. I mean, this might have actually been, I guess, Bloomington, Illinois. I thought Bloomington was in Indiana. Anyway, may plead guilty to 4 counts of distribution of cocaine, as well as 2 counts of possession of a firearm as a felon. According to the release from the DOJ between September 27th and October 25th, 2024, so over the span of a month, May sold cocaine and or guns in Bloomington on 5 separate occasions, in total selling 2 firearms and almost 152 grams of cocaine. May has 4 prior felony convictions. He was also on active probation out of McLean County, Illinois, at the time he committed the federal offenses. And again, as a felon, he was prohibited from having a firearm. Indicted in December of 2024, ended up pleading guilty in January of this year. And then the question becomes, why did this guy get nothing more than probation? Again, was this a plea agreement that was offered by the U.S. Attorney's Office? Or was this a sentence that was imposed over the objections of the U.S. Attorney by this federal judge? I don't have the answer to that. The DOJ release did not say. I have to say, if I were the U.S. attorney in this case, I would not be bragging about this sentence. My press release would be excoriating the judge for such a light sentence, but nevertheless, here we are. An individual, again, selling guns on the black market as a prohibited person, eligible for at least a decade behind bars just for the gun offense, and instead walking away with a slap on the wrist. Today's Armed Citizen story from East Texas, where a sheriff says a homeowner fatally shot an intruder through a front door, one of 2 front doors. You know, I think the home, like many homes, you got that, you know, glass storm door, and then you've got the wooden or a metal heavier front door. This was in Hopkins County. According to the Hopkins County Sheriff's Office, investigators were able to see Ring doorbell camera footage showing a guy named Buck Clary hitting and breaking part of the glass front door of a home in the northern part of the county. He then reached through the door into the home, I guess, to unlock the door from the inside. And a homeowner fired a shot through the door, hitting Clary, who was taken to a local medical facility where he later passed away. Sheriff's Office is investigating the case. Based on the circumstances, though, this would appear to be a case of self-defense. Texas law does allow you to use deadly force in response to somebody trying to break into your home under the theory that, again, they're not there to deliver flowers or offer you a present or just give you a nice big hug because they think that you're lonely, right? The fact that they are trying to forcibly enter your home is, in fact, evidence that your life is threatened. So unless there are some extenuating circumstances here, I would expect that the investigation is going to conclude that the homeowner was justified in using lethal force, but we'll keep our eyes open for any more details. I should mention, by the way, another potential self-defense case. I had not heard of this dude, Chud the Builder, until yesterday, and it amazes me that it is apparently so easy now for your profession to be walking around, streaming yourself, being a jackass to people. But I guess that's now a thing. That's a career path for some people. So that's what this guy, Chud the Builder, that's what he goes by online. That's what he does. He walks around. He calls black people the N-word, asks them, are you going to chimp out? After, you know, hurling slurs at him. He's already facing some other, I would say, more minor criminal charges. But yesterday in Clarksville, Tennessee, Dalton Etherly, that's his real name, 28 years old, shot a guy. And he says that the man was part of a group who were laughing and pointing at him. And then he walks up to the group. This guy named Joshua Fox tells him to go away before then walking back to him, saying, I have PTSD. Etherly said to authorities, the guy said, you started saying all that to chimp out bleep to me and I'm going to hit you. And he hit me. He started wailing on me. There are other reports that Etherly did, in fact, use some slurs towards the guy before this individual identified as Joshua Fox began punching Etherly, which is when Etherly drew his firearm, shot Fox, ended up grazing himself, too. And Etherly is claiming self-defense. I had a piece that they went up at Bearing Arms just a little bit ago, kind of looking at what Tennessee law says about this. There was actually a case that the Supreme Court, state Supreme Court, decided back in 2020, Tennessee versus Benson. And this involved a guy who was charged with murder. He was punched in the face by a woman. He ends up pulling a gun and shoots her five times. The judge denied a self-defense argument. He was convicted of murder. An appellate court overturned that conviction, said the jury should have been allowed to hear claims of self-defense. Tennessee Supreme Court weighs in and says, no, actually, it's up to the judge to decide whether or not the jury, whether or not a defendant can raise a self-defense claim. And in this case, they found no fault with the judge denying that self-defense claim for a couple of reasons that may actually play into Dalton Etherly's defense or Etherly's defense. The court said that Tennessee case law, quote, generally holds that self-defense is not available to a defendant who provoked or consented to the danger. So if there is eyewitness testimony, if Etherly was streaming and it's caught on, you know, video that he actually did try to provoke a response out of this guy, that could allow a judge to say, nah, man, you put yourself into this situation. You don't get to raise a self-defense claim. The Tennessee Supreme Court also ruled, actually the trial court ruled, and the Tennessee Supreme Court did not overturn this decision. The trial court ruled that getting punched in the face is not deadly force, basically. And so you may have the right to use non-lethal force in response to getting punched in the face, but you don't have the right to pull out a gun and shoot somebody five times, which is what Antonio Benson did, after you've been punched in the nose. The trial court said that getting punched in the nose is, quote, not serious bodily injury. Now, we could maybe disagree with that, and there are some possibly extenuating circumstances. The Tennessee Supreme Court noted that it was a, quote, small unarmed woman who punched Benson in the face. Maybe it's a little bit different if it's not, excuse me, a small unarmed woman, but it's a larger guy who's capable of throwing a more serious punch. Etherly's also not accused of shooting Joshua Fox in the back long after any physical threat had dissipated after, unlike the defendant Antonio Benson, who fired five shots, two of them into this woman's back. But I would say that, you know, simply saying, well, Etherly got punched, therefore he had the right to pull a gun and shoot in self-defense, it's not that cut and dried in Tennessee, and it's probably not that cut and dried in a lot of states. So I I don't think that this is a slam dunk case, particularly when you look at Etherly's social media accounts. He has definitely intentionally tried to provoke a response, whether it's an emotional response or a physical response. In some cases, basically challenging somebody to get physical with them after hurling these slurs at them. There was also a post from earlier this month, maybe about a week or so ago, and I don't have it right in front of me, so I'm paraphrasing, but it was essentially, I think he said something like, you know, the season finale of his live stream is going to feature him shooting somebody and then black people rioting after he gets off. That is probably not going to help his case. Because again, I think the prosecution could argue that that Etherly intended to provoke a physical response, not just against Joshua Fox, but every time he's going out and he's live streaming this stuff. And that, I think, under Tennessee case law, would allow a judge to say self-defense, not even an argument that can be raised by Dalton Etherly at trial. So we'll follow that case as well. To me, the simple solution here is don't try to make a living being a jackass and provoking people. That would probably spare you the possibility of getting punched in the face for your words. And if it really is just a case of this guy not being called a slur, that Etherly did nothing to provoke this individual in the moment, then maybe there is a stronger self-defense case to be made. Again, at this point, it's kind of he said, he said. We'll see what the investigation turns up. But again, I just don't think it's as cut and dried an issue as some of Etherly's defenders would like it to be. All right, finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. An Ohio man who saved a mom and daughter from a sinking car. It helps if the right place is your property, right? And that was the case in Mentor, Ohio. A 33-year-old Yanni Saris was at his home, his parents' home in Mentor, Ohio. He was helping his dad cut down some dead trees in the backyard a couple of days ago. Saris, by the way, is more than welcome to come down to Central Virginia. I've got some trees I need to get cut down too. His mom had left to pick up pizza. His dad went to the garage to grab a new battery for the cordless saw they were using. And so for a couple of minutes, Yanni Saris was by himself, and he hears this boom. He said, at the time, I thought it was possibly a garbage truck. You know, sometimes when they set down like a dumpster or something, you can make a boom sound. He said, I looked up, and this SUV was coming up, came down, came across 1, 2, 3, 4 yards. He said, then the right two wheels just went down the hill over there, and it just kept driving basically into the center of a pond. Inside the SUV, Kim Wallace and her 8-year-old daughter, Olivia, it was just the two of them. Kim Wallace said, we're coming home from Olive Garden. And she said, I started to feel really like nauseous, kind of like sick, like starting to feel not just right. And she said, yeah, next thing I know, her son was literally waking me up from the car. Her son, meaning Yanni Saris. Kim Wallace passed out behind the wheel. Her car goes through a fence, through several signs, several yards, and then goes into this pond. Yanni Saris starts sprinting towards the water. He said, you know, when you hear a big boom like that and you hear a little girl screaming, he said, it felt like it was 30 seconds, but it was really probably 3 seconds. He said, you just go right into reaction mode. You just jump in. There are lives in the water. You got to do what's right. And he said, you know, people are calling me the hero. But he said, if the daughter didn't open that door instantly once the car started driving to the center of the pond, he said, there was nothing I could do even if I got out there. So Olivia Wallace had unbuckled herself. She pushed the door open. She started swimming towards the shore, and she's screaming for somebody to help her mom. Yanni was able to get her to dry land, kind of push her off towards a neighbor who had also come running from about 3 houses down. And then he told the little girl, he said, I'm going to try and I'm going to do my best. So he went back out in the water. He said by the time he got to the car, it was water was past his chest. Front door was submerged, so he had to go in through the back door. He said, Mom's still unconscious. She hadn't reacted yet. He said, I knew I had to act instantly. So I reached over, I unbuckled the seatbelt, began to pull her from underneath her arms through the back, through the center of the console, through the back of the car. He said, that's when she started to wake up. He was able to swim with Kim Wallace to safety. And then he said everything just kind of went black. He kind of gave out afterwards, you know, the adrenaline and then just, you know, getting to dry land himself. It sounds like Yanni Saris just kind of passed out. Police responded to the scene. Neighbors showed up with a blanket. There was a girl on her way to prom who stopped to help. Basically, the entire community responded at one point. And Sarah said, you know, the community is full of families and young ones. He says there are about 15 little kids in this cul-de-sac right here. And every time I pull down the driveway, they're all together playing. He also said that he's been lucky to be raised by a great mom and dad. He said, I've had incredible mentors that always just taught me to do the right thing. And that was the right thing. So it's been a couple of weeks since this incident happened. Kim Wallace is doing better. They're actually able to reunite with Yanni Saris at a local park. And she told him, we just can't thank you enough. She said, I'm so grateful that you were there. I don't think I got the chance really to express that to you because we were all in shock. And she added, you know, a lot of people are quick to bust out their phone and their film, right? Again, to live stream. And Kim Wallace said, he didn't even do that. She said, I'm just grateful, grateful, grateful. Her husband, Chris, had the chance to thank Yanni Saris as well, saying her family is still here today because of you. Because I don't know what it would have been. And Olivia Wallace, little girl that Yanni says is the real hero of the story, told him, thank you for just saving me and my mom. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing for a family in need. Yanni Saris, here in Mentor, Ohio, we thank you for your very, very good deed. And that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I do want to let you know, next week, next Wednesday, and this is subject to change, but next Wednesday, as of right now, we are scheduled to talk with ATF Director Robert Sakata here on the program. I'm looking forward to this. And I know when I was talking with Lee Williams earlier in the week, and we were talking about the Tata Damiak's case, and I said, you know, I plan on raising that issue about Tata Damiak's diesel therapy with Assistant Attorney General Harmy Dillon, if I had the chance to talk with her. I did not do that because by the time we were able to talk with Harmy, Lee had reported that diesel therapy had been canceled, had been rescinded. And I don't know that Harmy Dillon actually has anything to do with Tata Damiak's case. But since then, Tata Damiak has released essentially an open letter to ATF Director Robert Sakata. I have made sure that Director Sakata is aware of that letter, and I will be asking him about it and asking him about the Tata Damiak situation when he joins us next week. So I do want to let you know we will be talking about that. We'll also be talking about some of the new rules that the ATF is promulgating. We won't have time to get to all 34 of them, I think 32 of them, maybe 31 of them dealing with firearms. But we are going to try to hit the biggies. So if there is a particular rule or a particular question that you have about one of these rules for ATF Director Robert Sakata, let me know. If you're a VIP, VIP Gold, VIP Platinum member, you can just shoot me a direct message at bearingarms.com. Otherwise, leave a comment here below and I'll check it out before we speak with Robert Sakata. Looking forward to having the opportunity to sit down with him next week, and I will let you know more details about that coming up in the days ahead. In the meantime, be sure to check out bearingarms.com today and tomorrow and throughout the weekend. We are going to keep you up to date on all the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. Supreme Court meeting and conference again tomorrow, and there are a number of Second Amendment cases that are scheduled to be discussed in conference, including Tata Damiak's appeal. So maybe we'll get some good news about that coming out on Monday. I have to say I'm not particularly hopeful, but I am I'm glad to see so many Second Amendment organizations coming to his defense, filing amicus briefs in support of his appeal. But we'll be checking out what's going on with the Supreme Court, state legislatures, and much more. Again, you can find it all at bearingarms.com. If you like what you see, we'd also encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. Just use the promo code FIGHT and take 60% off your membership. You get some great benefits no matter what tier of support you choose, and no matter which tier you choose, you'll be supporting the work we're doing at Bearing Arms. And I want to thank you for that as well. Until we talk again, be well, be safe, be free.